You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This is going to be your National Signing Day breakdown of sorts, plus your Bison basketball home after a big win at home last night. And joining me, as always, after coming back from a glorious vacation is Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how was the sun and how was returning to Fargo after that?
It was great. I had a couple of friends down in Arizona, went to the Waste Management Open. I was able to watch the IUPUI basketball game and pay attention to the South Dakota game while I was down there and do some radio work on signing day. But reality struck when it was 3 degrees when I returned to the great state of North Dakota.
So there you go. So Ross is now back enjoying the warmth like we all are in the upper Midwest. But let's get into it. Let's get into our news part of the segment, Ross. And to start, why don't we talk a little bit men's basketball before we get into the signing day spectacular. So we have a couple of – or a new uniform to talk about. I don't know if you were here to see it, but what do you think about the new anthracite uniforms?
That was cool. You know, the kids are always interested as far as recruiting is concerned in the uniforms and the gear. It's just something that, you know, appeals to athletes of that age and something that every team is trying to kind of stay ahead of. NDSU didn't have all the numbers for the kids on the team for the gold alternates this year. I would anticipate, according to a source, them getting new gold alternates next season, but they got these swanky anthracite unis this year, and it's interesting. You know, black isn't a school color, and when they put everything out on Instagram, it was hard to tell that that was that really dark gray that they use for a lot of the coaches' shirts and some of the jackets and stuff, just because there is such a stark difference between black, green, and white being the University of North Dakota's color scheme and green and gold being NDSU's. They like to use a really dark gray anytime they can as opposed to black. So those dark gray, or Nike calls it anthracite uniforms, were really sharp, and they got everybody excited, even if the play on the floor that particular day didn't.
Yep, and so the only other news note we really have is that there was a post-National Signing Day walk-on announced. Well, I don't know if it was necessarily announced, but it was retweeted from the NDSU coaching staff. A kid from Colorado Springs, Colorado, a wide receiver, cornerback of sorts, 5'11", 185 pounds. Peter, I'm going to go with Isaias. Ross, I don't know if we were talking about this in the pre-production meeting, but is this the first time they've got a Colorado kid on the roster in how many years?
It's been a long time. I told you that I thought maybe somebody in the mid-2000s was from Colorado, but that was actually an FBS transfer from Colorado on an FBS transfer from Air Force, guys that actually didn't see a ton of playing time. But this is, I think, a kid with some NDSU ties. I'm not 100% sure what they are, but had heard of the program or had some ties to the program and is – you know, that 6-foot-tall, 200-pound type safety wide receiver athlete body type that you often see from a walk-on.
All right, so let's get into it in terms of our signing day special. Obviously, the Bison Report, we do a lot with recruiting. You guys have been able to follow along that journey basically for 365 days a year once there is a commit. Obviously, we talk about them and see how that fits into the class. But let's start with quarterback, Ross. We're only really going to touch on the scholarship kids in this podcast. I don't know that we're necessarily going to get into too many of the walk-ons, but they did sign one scholarship quarterback in Holden Hotchkiss from Lakeland, Florida. What are your thoughts on the 6'4" signal caller, Ross?
Holden's a tough one to kind of peg just because of the distance from North Dakota that he played. You never know how to really evaluate that tape, what level of Florida ball he was playing. At the same time, he played with some really good receivers. Willie Baker is a kid that had some FCS interest, and then he had two FBS wide receivers outside. I think one ended up at Florida and the other one ended up at Central Florida, both four-star kids. So your question,
so he's got some talent around him, is what you're telling me.
Right, and so your question, of course, becomes how much was the talent around him? Just how good is Holden? And then why did a quarterback from Florida end up at North Dakota State? But then, you know, you talk about the good things. The arm strength sure seems to be there. He seems to throw an accurate ball. And at the same time, he has all those measurables you're looking for. You mentioned 6'4". You mentioned he's already cleared 200 pounds. That's the type of frame that a quarterback's coach like Randy Hedberg can get really excited about working with and is going to be able to see over those big farm boys that make up the NDSU offensive line.
Obviously, Holden being a camp kid as well, I know that was something Coach Kleiman talked about in his press conference. Him coming to camp, really showing his interest in North Dakota State, obviously flying to Fargo from Florida, just to camp even without an offer yet, kind of shows how interested you are in the Bison. And I think that was somewhat, to an extent, the Carson Wentz effect, because you'll remember that Carson was drafted, obviously, late April, and this camp being in June, there was still a hype that, you know, an FCS kid going the number two pick in the NFL draft. He flies up there, camps. I think we were there that day, Ross. I don't remember if we watched too closely the quarterbacks that day, but obviously he ends up getting offered, and then now he's going to be there. I mean, this is kind of a bigger discussion for a different day, but you look at Holden and you look at the quarterback position after Easton leaves, I think it's pretty much up for grabs no matter what. I mean, you look at Holden, you look at two other kids they've signed the last two classes. I mean, do you agree that after Easton graduates, I mean, this thing is going to be up for grabs?
Certainly. And they're going to have to figure it out a little bit sooner rather than later, because going into next season, Stick will, of course, be a junior, but his backup, Cole Davis, will be a senior. And so when they go into Stick's senior year, they're not going to have a number two quarterback that they know anything about. And who serves that year as the backup is really going to tell you a lot, I think, about what the staff at that point in time, at least, will view as the future of the program. They already moved James Hendricks to safety. That was announced at the signing day press conference. That was a kid who had played a lot of scout team quarterback. He scouted Eli Jenkins when the Bison played Jacksonville State in the national championship game. He did a lot of things for the team kind of behind the scenes, but he's 6'1" and 200 pounds. They're going to give him a shot to earn playing time, much in the same way that they did to Ashley Thornton. So what they've got now, I believe, is Henry Van Dellen is the third string quarterback. Cole Davis is the backup. And then Hotchkiss and, of course, Noah Sanders will enter that that competition for Stick's job when he's gone, in addition to probably whoever they recruit this year, because that student-athlete as well is going to have a chance to redshirt and then join that quarterback competition as a potential four-year starter.
Yeah, so there is going to have to be some things that sort themselves out here in the next couple of years at quarterback, but luckily Easton's going to be here for the next two. So let's switch to the running back position next. Only one scholarship running back signed, and that is Mr. Seth Wilson from Holman, Wisconsin. Again, another camp kid. I know he was really, really impressed. He buys in coaching staff at camp. He's a very good track kid. He's got, I believe, an 11-1 100 time, a 22-8 200 time. He was on the 4x1 track team for his high school that won state. I mean, he's a kid who's extremely, extremely productive for his high school as well. You watch the film. Someone that isn't necessarily going to be a game breaker east or west, but what he is he's elusive going north and south, and he knows how to break a tackle because he is so strong at 195 pounds, 5'10". How do you think Seth Wilson is going to fit into the running back depth chart here going forward?
Well, I sure thought it was interesting when Coach Kleiman mentioned that he was potentially one of the kids that could contribute sooner rather than later, just because you have such a stacked backfield there for the Bison. You're talking about Lance Dunn and Bruce Anderson, a potential 1-2 punch, but even behind them, Damaris Purifoy was a very highly recruited kid and somebody that they were excited to get on campus. Ty Brooks showed some things in the return game, showed some things coming out of the backfield as well. He's a local product. He's a fan favorite. So you've got four backs there with the addition of Adam Cofield having completed his redshirt season. It's difficult, I think, to project early playing time from Wilson unless he really is a special player. And it's difficult to see if he is a special player just because his level of competition in Wisconsin, it wasn't much. I mean, Holman was in a lower class of Wisconsin football playing against really small towns. He ran out of kind of an archaic offense, nothing that you would see in the Bison playbook. And so it's tough to get a handle on just how good Seth Wilson is unless you really paid attention to him in camp, which admittedly I didn't.
Yeah, so again, as Ross lays out, it looks like it's going to be a difficult time for him to get early playing time. But again, with a fantastic running back stable like you have at North Dakota State, that's not going to be a surprise. Let's move to wide receiver next. Only one wide receiver signed in Christian Watson. Obviously, the two names that we're not talking about are Marcus Hayes, who ended up deciding on New Mexico over NDSU. He took an official visit to New Mexico on the 20th, NDSU on the 27th, and ultimately decided he wanted to go to New Mexico. And then Isaiah Hill, someone that we saw at camp back in June, someone that NDSU had committed for many, many, many months. And then he decides, I believe, a week and a half, 2 weeks before signing day, he just doesn't feel a fit in this NDSU offense because he doesn't believe that they throw the ball as much and he wants to be a utilized talent, so he heads off to South Dakota State. So Christian Watson is a very, very interesting kid to me. I know this is a guy that NDSU is very happy to sign because he was 5'9", I believe, heading into his junior year. Now he is 6'2", 175 pounds, someone that's grown 4 or 5 inches since he's been in high school. So he had to learn the nuances of the wide receiver position when he was a smaller kid, because again, he didn't have the size to get away with things. So when you watch the film, this is one of my favorite players from the class. I think he can be someone that could be, after his redshirt season, an immediate impact guy, because again, you don't find a lot of guys 6'2" with his body control out there, and being able to get him over some interest from South Florida and Central Florida is always a good thing. So when you look at Christian Watson, Ross, how do you think he fits in? Obviously, I know we were super high on Sean Engel last year, thought he was going to be able to play right away. He has to redshirt. So do you think that's going to be the same course for Christian?
I do. In the sense of everybody that was back when Engel was competing is back again, plus you add Engel to that group. And I think you have two guys in Engel and Watson that are definitely going to have to be part of the future of the receiver group, just because of how sparingly the Bison have gotten scholarship athletes at that position the last two classes. Now at the same time, a lot of the kids that they brought in from walk-on, like I said, are right in that 6'2", 200-pound range, where you're either trying them out at safety, maybe you're putting a little weight on them, trying them out at linebacker, trying them out at wide receiver. They have plenty of options on kids that aren't on scholarships, and you see, you know, guys like Eric Perkins, guys like Dallas Freeman, who even had a nice little impact last season. Those guys make plays and have a spot at North Dakota State. But at the same time, two total scholarship wide receivers in two classes, both of those kids kind of have to hit. So I hope that, you know, if you're a Bison fan, you're hoping that Watson lives up to Ryan's billing there for sure.
Yeah. And again, obviously it goes without saying, more times than not, you're going to have two wide receivers on the field at any time. So you only signing two scholarship wide receivers the last two classes. They're going to have to start to recruit some more and be able to hit on some more scholarship guys. But again, I mean, what do you think of the Isaiah Hill situation? Obviously, he decommits when looking at the fact that NDSU doesn't throw the ball a lot. I mean, how much do you think that is being used against them in recruiting? And I mean, how do you think it's something that they can overcome?
Well, I think, you know, part of it where I'm not 100% sure that the team he ended up signing with was being completely honest with him about a few things, but that's sort of the nature of the beast. And at the same time, it's a real concern. No wide receiver is going to catch 100 balls in NDSU's offense. It's not going to happen. That's not how this offense is really engineered. At the same time, this offense is going to get a player prepared for the NFL more than the spread offenses that you see throughout college football, really, because they absolutely do run a pro set. That's why, you know, Carson Wentz was able to assimilate into the Eagles offense so easily and so quickly. Now, does North Dakota State have a receiver in the NFL? Not at this time, but that doesn't mean that you can't get there by running NDSU's pro style offense. You just have to be a good player and you have to put the work in. So I understand completely, you know, what the issue is. I understand how to recruit against NDSU, both you know, at the quarterback position, although Carson Wentz kind of ended that, but then at the wide receiver and tight end position, because you're not going to get 60 balls at tight end and you're not going to get 100 balls at receiver. I completely understand that.
All right, so let's switch to the tight end position where they were assigned three tight end types, maybe a fullback in there, and I'm going to ask you about that here in a second. But look at the three tight ends they signed. Austin Avery, someone that came up from Yorkville, Illinois on the final weekend before National Signing Day, and he was offered, immediately accepted. A kid who had a Valparaiso offer, 6'4", maybe 6'3", 215 pounds there. Then you look at the two crown jewels in Josh Babich and Noah Gindorf. Obviously, I will probably go into it more in depth on Noah, obviously, why I'm so high on him. I mean, you've heard me babble about him for many a podcast, but getting him over Minnesota when Minnesota wanted him badly in the worst way after Fleck took over is obviously a huge win, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later. And then Josh Babich at 6'5", 220 pounds, someone that had to play a lot of different positions for his high school. He played quarterback, he played tight end as a senior, and yeah, I think he also played some on the defensive side of the ball. Both Babich and Gindorf also have pretty good offer lists, obviously. So I know that we were talking about this in the pre-production meeting, Ross, but when you look at Austin Avery, I know that you had a different kind of a fit for him in terms of maybe he's not a traditional wide tight end, but, well, if he's not going to be that, what do you think he's going to be?
I think that's your Andrew Bonnet type there. Not 6'4", not 6'5", closer to 6'3". So right on the border of being too tall to play fullback, but still a guy that they're going to be able to use there. So I think, you know, when you're slotting these guys, you're probably looking at Gindorf as an inline and flex. You're probably looking at Babich as a flex, and then this kid as inline and fullback. The Bison offense is always going to use a ton of personnel. It might drive some of the fans insane, but at the same time, you're talking about a group that won 5 straight national championships and then in the 6th year was able to reach the national semifinals. This is not an unsuccessful program. So, I mean, they can kind of just continue to do things the way that they have been doing and expect similar levels of success. That's where I would slot those guys, certainly.
And so, again, you look at the tight end position, it has an extremely bright future in my eyes. I mean, you look at what they've signed the last few classes, and then you look at Babich and Gindorf specifically, I think there's going to be a lot of passes going in between the numbers to these guys. And again, Babich and Gindorf are very talented with the ball in their hands. So when you're looking at potentially having to replace Easton Stick and you have to break in a new quarterback, usually the tight end is his best friend. And hopefully by that time, redshirt freshman, redshirt sophomore, and redshirt junior tight ends are ready to contribute. So, I mean, that's probably something we also have to talk about here down the line.
Certainly, and I think when you're looking at the passing game, they really expected Ben Ellison, who had the Purdue offer, to contribute in the passing game because that's the type of player that he was at Hawley. But after hanging the weight on him, he became such a good blocker and focused on that so much that that's most of what you saw him do in 2016.
Absolutely. So now let's transition to the offensive line spot. They signed two guard types in my eyes, and Zach Willis and Nash Jensen. Both Zach and Nash are very, very big gentlemen. I think both of them are probably over 300 pounds right now. I know Nash is at least 350 pounds right now. Obviously, Zach Willis chooses the Bison over, I believe, every Dakota school. A kid from West Fargo decides to stay home. He gets his offer, I believe, after camp, decides he wants to stay home. 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. Someone I think is going to be playing guard early in his career, and then Nash Jensen at about every FCS Missouri Valley offer early from the spring of his 20s, I think spring 2016. And he's a kid, 6'3". I've seen live a few times. He is gigantic. He's at least 350 pounds. He may be more right now, so they're going to have to work with him on controlling his weight. But if he gets his hands on it, he's going to be a road grader. So when you look at both of these guys potentially being guards, how do you think that fits into this Bison offensive line looking into the future?
I mean, it fits great immediately and down the line because you talk about last year, I think the two crowns of that class were Cordell Volson, a very skinny basketball player, tackle type, and Dylan Radins, who, as I've mentioned, is right out of that Tony Baselli body type of just your perfect left tackle. Those are going to be, you know, perimeter guys are going to be tackles for sure. So the next, you know, the next class, you want to hit those beefier guard types, and if they don't get any beefier than the Nash, certainly. I'm really impressed with the way that he moves, carrying as much weight as he does. They're definitely going to be, you know, one of the rare cases with Nash, of course, when he gets to campus, that they're going to try and cut weight off of him instead of hang muscle on him. So that'll be quite the task, I think, for Kramer. And then Zach Willis is another kid who I've had the opportunity to meet. We actually work out at the same facility that he uses in the offseason when he's not doing his high school mandated stuff. And so I've been able to talk to him a few times and just kind of see him work. And he's a very, very athletic kid and somebody I think that is right in there with a lot of the, you know, the Bolson brothers and some of the others, you know, Plankers and Leckler before him, where they like to use these North Dakota kids on the interior of the offensive line.
Let's get to the position group that I'm extremely high on. I think NDSU hit a home run with this class. When you look at the four defensive linemen scholarship guys that they signed, Spencer Wagey, Tanner Sunt, Lane Tucker, and Logan McCormick, you have two really big bodies in Spencer and Tanner. Tanner being 6'4", 6'3", 240 pounds, and then Spencer at 6'5", 230 pounds. Lane Tucker, they get from Wyoming, over Wyoming, at 6'4", probably 250 pounds. And then Logan McCormick as well, someone from a very good high school program in Kimberly, Wisconsin, 6'3", 235 pounds. And I'm sure folks are going to head over to the Bison Report to read the signing day awards that were recently just put up. But Ross, I know that we both are extremely high on this defensive line group. When you look at these four that they signed, obviously Lane Tucker is going to be a defensive tackle, and we'll see what Tanner and Spencer grow into. But what do you think about these four scholarship guys that they just signed?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I really do think this was the you know, talk about Noah Gindorf as the crown jewel of the class, but this was the crown jewel position. I mean, this was the best that they did from a standpoint of where did they get all the best group of athletes. And I definitely think that it was on the defensive line. Three defensive ends that I think will all be contributors. They all be able to contribute in different ways. McCormick, I think you and I both are really high on Sunt and Wagey. And when I was on Bison 1660, they asked me about this class. It's really the length that blows me away. You talk about the Bison, you know, using a Kyle Emanuel, using a Greg Menard, even back in the day, using Joe Mays, guys like Joe Lardnoy, undersized players to beat bigger guys from, you know, the Big Ten schools they played, or even just the rest of FCS. Well, the Bison aren't going to have to beat anyone with undersized players anymore because none of their players are undersized. These are huge athletes that they've had coming in for 2 years now. And I think that really has a lot to do with some of the national exposure they've been able to get. They pretty much don't lose FCS battles anymore, and they win some FBS battles. So you're seeing a new type of athlete come to North Dakota State in the recruiting process, and I think nothing really shows that more than this year's class of defensive linemen.
And defensive line is always going to be the hardest position to recruit because you're not able to find guys like Spencer from South Dakota or Tanner from Farmington, guys that are going to be 6'4" with great length, good burst, good explosiveness at 240 pounds. I mean, it's so hard to find those kind of a guys because if you find them, that usually means somebody else is going to be able to find them, and then you're going to be in a recruiting battle. So for NDSU being able to sign these four guys, again, I think this is the home run group, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But let's go up to linebacker now. To the only linebacker that they signed on scholarship here in Jack Begley, someone from Millard North, Omaha, Nebraska. Ross, I know from reading your tidbits in the signing day story, I know that you're particularly high on Jack Begley.
Yeah, he's a hitter and a guy at 6'3". You talk about length, there's your length. DeLuca, for much of his career, towered over the rest of the Bison linebackers that he played with. And then all of a sudden, here are big PRG Tucker and big MJ Stumpf, and now there's more big linebackers coming to North Dakota State. Begley, I think they tried to get one really good linebacker in this class. I know they looked at some guys that ended up FBS, like a Nico Bolden from the cities area. They settled on Jack Begley, who, you know, is going to get every chance in the world to contribute. At the same time, has a lot in front of him to deal with Nick DeLuca coming back, Matt Yeah, Plank is back. You know, that list of Bison linebackers who have redshirted and been a part of the program already is very long. You talk about Jordan, you talk about Mercadel. Marlette is still part of the program. Chris Board is still a part of the program. All the kids that they brought in last year now have redshirted, and they're going to be very deep at the linebacker position for a long time. So it's unsurprising, even with how important linebackers are and how there are three of, you know, they play three true linebackers. They're not a 3-4 where they just play two off the ball guys, that they only took one.
Again, I'm guessing Begley's probably going to be a guy you see as redshirting early in his career.
Yeah, there's just no room. I mean, I think, you know, it's the same thing with, you talk about Jabril Cox, who, if you listen to some of the hype, is the best player in the program. You talk about Jabril Cox, as good as he was, they still couldn't find time for him to play. And now you add him to the mix and you add Plank, you know, basically having starter status with the best linebacker in FCS and Nick DeLuca returning. There's just no way for Begley to find any time. Plus, he's 6'3", 200 pounds. At 6'3", to play linebacker, you're going to want to carry 230 pounds. So they've got weight they need to hang on this kid, and I would be shocked if he didn't redshirt.
All right, let's switch to our final position group, and that's going to be the defensive backs. These are the guys that NDSU had, I wouldn't say a tougher time of finding in this class, but they're sure – waited until the last few weeks until they started to offer some of these guys. They had Joshua Hayes, someone from Lake Gibson High School in Florida, Dawson Weber from a cornerback. It's a 6'2" white corner. You just don't see a lot of that coming basically in any kind of Division I football. And obviously Dawson Weber going to NDSU fits that bill. Then Michael Tutsi at safety. So you have kind of an athlete, kind of a tweener type in Joshua Hayes, who could be a cornerback or a safety, depending on where they need him right away. Dawson Weber could play some cornerback at safety at 6'2" with his length. And then Michael Tutsi, someone that NDSU was able to flip from South Dakota State. So take that, Jackrabbits, for taking Isaiah Hill. So you have those three defensive backs. How do you think they fit in the short term and in the long term, once again, Ross?
Well, much like you saw with Darren Kelly, you saw with Jalen Wimbush, they are moving towards a more hybrid type of defensive back, as is football as a whole. I think they'd like to see a few more true corners, like a Felix Dixon from last year's class. But you had Trey Dempsey, who played corner and then moved to free safety. Christian Dudzik played a little corner his freshman year and then started at safety for three seasons. But they're going to move guys all over the place, and that's, I think, exactly what they got in Tutsi, Hayes, and Weber. I think Tutsi they're probably going to be most comfortable with at safety, but those other two guys I really believe could play either way. It just depends on how everything shakes out in camp, though I would guess that you'll probably see North Dakota State look at least two true cornerbacks in their next recruiting cycle.
All right, let's transition to our favorite players of this class. I mean, you can read all of our thoughts on this class. We just released our 2017 Bison Report Recruiting Awards, just went live just before we started recruiting this, so you can head over to the Bison Report and read that for free now. But let's start with our best offensive players. I could have taken the easy way out. I saw who you picked as I was writing it, but why don't you start first with your best offensive player?
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you beat a Big Ten school, you have to pay attention to the kid, and this is a kid that you gushed about, and just because you gushed about him doesn't mean what I wrote is any less true. For me, it's Gindorf. I think he is the crown jewel of the class, if you want to talk about that. A guy that certainly could have gone to the University of Minnesota, and a player that just has athleticism on a frame that NDSU doesn't have at this time, or really any time in recent memory. You talk about Jeremiah Wurzbacher, those mid-2000s teams, like the teams that played those back-to-back games in Minnesota. He was nowhere near the athlete that Gindorf is, but he had that type of frame, and he was one of Steve Walker's favorite targets. You get a year to hang weight on Gindorf and teach him how to play tight end. You could have a four-year impact player there and somebody that gives the Bison really an elite option running down the hash marks, which is not something that you've necessarily had in that offense for a while. They've been able to do it a little bit with a guy like Andrew Bonnet, but at the same time, you know, Bonnet was 6'3". This is a kid that could potentially be too big for defensive backs and too tall for or too fast for linebackers, and that's what you're always looking for. You could have a Dallas Goedert type impact in the passing game for North Dakota State.
Yeah, I could have taken Gindorf. Spoiler alert, I already knew that Ross picked Gindorf and Seika just doing something a little bit different. I did take Christian Watson. Again, I watched the kid's film knowing his background that he was a smaller kid earlier in his career. And then you watch the tape. You know, for a high school kid, he's a pretty decent route runner. And for being 6'2" and having the body control that he has to go up and make contested catches, I mean, that's something that's invaluable going against these smaller cornerbacks, 5'10" versus 6'2". If he knows how to position, he knows how to go up and high point the ball and obviously make something after the catch, that's going to be a pretty special player. So as Ross already said, though, I don't know that he's going to be an immediate impact kind of a player, knowing that if Sean Engel can't really crack that, I don't know that Christian Watson can. So speaking of immediate impact, Ross, who do you think is going to be the first offensive player to see time, knowing that, again, this entire 2016 class redshirted, who do you think is going to be the first on offense to make an impact?
Well, I think it's Jensen, just because I think he's a legitimate physical freak, and the Bison graduated both guards with Austin Kuhnert having missed the first two games with an academic suspension last year. You never know if you can count on his availability. You could have a vacuum there in the interior of the offensive line, and I think Nash has the best chance to contribute there because, as we talked about earlier, last year's class of kids, that offensive lineman was heavy on the perimeter. So that's, I mean, you talk about a tough task when you recruited an entire 2016 class, but I think if anybody has a chance to do it on offense, it's Nash.
I don't know that I can disagree with that because, again, you look at running back, you look at wide receiver, you look at tight end, everything looks pretty deep there. So if it's not going to be Nash Jensen, I wouldn't be surprised if Holden Hotchkiss sees time sooner rather than later. Again, we've talked about it. Easton's going to be here two more years, hopefully. And if that's going to be the case, I think that he can absolutely compete with Henry Van Dellen. I think that that quarterback position is going to be a wide-open battle. And so when you look at this, he's obviously going to redshirt, and then who says he can't come in and play as a redshirt sophomore? So we'll have to see how that shakes out. Now let's put to the defensive side of the ball. In your eyes, who is the best defensive player from this class?
I think it's probably Sunt from Farmington. He really showed out to me the most on tape. I believe he was picked as Minnesota's defensive lineman of the year. I don't know, you know, what the Gophers' concerns were with him as far as not having much interest with him, but anytime you have a state with the population of Minnesota and you get their best defensive lineman, you got to be pretty excited about that. And like I said, Sunt adds length to that defensive line that wasn't previously there.
I've seen Tanner multiple times, someone I'm high on as well. I think he's going to get up to 270 pounds or so. Not really sure where he'll fit in there. Maybe he's a 3 or 5 tech, but we'll have to see. In terms of my best defensive player, I'm going with the best player from South Dakota and Spencer Wagey. Someone that 6'5", and I think a legit 6'5" after watching his tape. He's 6'5" with good burst off the line, and he's got tremendous length. Again, you don't find a lot of guys like that going to the FCS. I wrote this in the article today, but if he was a guy that lived in the Twin Cities, I think he would have had every MAC offer he wanted, because 6'5" with length, and if you have even a hint of explosion that Spencer has, you're going to get offers, because defensive line and defensive and edge kind of players are so hard to find. So I think Spencer is someone that is going to be a fantastic player with his 6'5" frame, and I just think that he's going to be an immediate impact kind of a guy if they need to find one. Speaking of immediate impact, same question for you, Ross. Who do you think is going to be the first guy on the defensive side of the ball to see time?
I believe it's probably Bagley, and I know that sounds crazy because I just talked about all of those linebackers for the current defense. But at the same time, not a ton of real big linebackers besides Jabril Cox, who I think they want to keep as an outside linebacker because of his potential as a pass rusher. If Bagley's able to hang that weight and is any – I mean, I know they went to the same high school, but is any kind of the same player that, DeLuca is, and that's a lot of – real big shoes to fill. But if he's that kind of player at all – I really think you could potentially see him in the mix for that Mike linebacker spot as a redshirt freshman if they want to use him the same way that they used DeLuca in that 6'3" frame. If they want to get a big kid out there, I think that Begley is kind of alone with that kind of size. And so you could potentially see him contributing on defense sooner rather than later. You talk about Moses Iheanacho, you talk about Ross Kennelly. Those are more of those Travis Beck type linebackers that were part of the 2016 class. So as deep as the defensive line is and as young as last year's secondary was, I really think after you graduate Plank and DeLuca, that interior linebacker is a spot where you might look to replace a guy, and Begley could be that guy.
In my opinion, I'm going to go with Josh Hayes. I'm going to go a little bit more off the board, obviously, him being a defensive back. I think after his redshirt year, I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be a major contributor on special teams. And then I think he was so productive when you watch his tape. He did a little bit of everything for his high school. He was a playmaker. He was able to get a lot of interceptions. He's able to be someone that's force and run support. I just find if he is 5'11", 6 foot tall, you can do a lot of things with that on special teams and then ultimately find his way onto the field on defense. So only a couple more things here for the signing day part of this podcast. And one of the final few things is the best story from the recruiting season. I think we are both going to be in agreement here, Ross. I think it is probably going to be Noah Gindorf saying no to Minnesota. Again, I'm sure folks know I also cover the Gophers recruiting, and I can tell you with 110% certainty, once P.J. Fleck took the job at Minnesota, one of the first phone calls he made was to Noah Gindorf, immediately offered him. And Noah decided after taking a visit there that he wanted to stick with North Dakota State. So anytime you're able to get a Minnesota kid that Minnesota wanted and you're able to get him to North Dakota State, I say it's a heck of a story. But do you have a different story other than I, or are we both in agreement here?
No, there are a couple of different stories from this recruiting cycle, but I think that one takes the cake, and we can certainly move on to the next point.
All right, so favorite walk-on. I'm sure you're probably going to take Noah Sanders. I'm going to go with Costner Ching. I think that I know that I've seen him line a couple of times, 6'2", 6'3", 250 pounds. You can do a lot of things with guys like that. Again, guys with that kind of body type and guys that are as physical as Costner shows on tape are very difficult to find, and being able to get him from South Dakota to walk on at North Dakota State, I think, is a pretty good get. So my favorite is going to be Costner Ching. What say you?
I mean, I'll talk about Noah Sanders in a second, but I do also want to make specific mention of Max Bouch. Max Bouch was a guy that was potentially going to be a scholarship athlete, really was interested in the NDSU program. And then the coaching staff went to him and explained that they needed a scholarship for Nick DeLuca that they didn't think they were going to need. And Bouch wanted to be part of the program so badly that he continued to stick with North Dakota State throughout his recruiting process, ended up committing there as a preferred walk-on, and is going to be a Bison and pay his own way until he earns a scholarship on the team. So that's a kid that I think you should pay attention to in that linebacking core as well, because I really do think that Bouch, just from watching his film, is an FCS-level talent, and by that I mean scholarship-level talent. So that's one guy I would watch. But, yeah, Noah Sanders is another guy who had legitimate FCS scholarship offers to be their class's quarterback and wanted to be a Bison, decided to be a Bison, pay his own way. He's going to be a walk-on kid. I think he had a knee injury junior year, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Noah Sanders right in there with Henry Van Dellen and Holden Hotchkiss as guys competing for that quarterback spot after Easton Stick graduates.
All right, so that's going to do it with the signing day portion. Let's get to the basketball talk. Since we've last spoken, there have been three games played, I believe, two of them being losses, one on the road to IUPUI, a home loss to South Dakota, and then last night, a 17-point victory over South Dakota State. So let's start with these two losses last week. You look at this IUPUI game loss. They just shot the lights out, quite frankly. They shot 58% from three, and they had 14 made threes on the Bison. You're frankly just not going to win a lot of games when a team shoots as well as they did that night.
No, and specifically Matt O'Leary really shot the ball well. I thought that that was just a heck of an effort really by the Bison. I think that they played at a really high level to force overtime. I think that they just, they lost guys a couple times, but they made 14 threes, I believe. And it was a really good game that IUPUI needed to have at home, and they got it. And just because NDSU's been better on the road this season doesn't mean you're going to win them all on the road. And that's something that I think they've made huge strides in, but winning on the road in college basketball is still really difficult, and it's always going to be really difficult. So I was impressed with that performance, and there just isn't a whole heck of a lot you can do there.
Well, when you look at that game, obviously it did go into overtime, but the name to really know there is Tyson Wart. He led the Bison 22 points, 9 of 13 from the field, obviously extremely efficient. He also had 7 boards in that game. Tyson Wart, I think, is proving to be a heck of a – and I know that we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but Tyson Wart has been a heck of a find for this coaching staff.
Yeah, I thought that the previous game for him where he had kind of a LeBron light type thing where he had lots of points, lots of rebounds, lots of assists was going to be his coming out party, but he played even better against IUPUI. And I think without him, they really would have struggled in that game. He's becoming a very serious part of the rotation. We're going to talk about him a little later, but he was very impressive. I thought maybe on the last play, it would have been pretty wild to call it, but I really thought Kai Cabellis of regulation should have been, shooting free throws. He pretty much got shoved out of bounds, which I thought was a ridiculous play made by IUPUI because there was 1.9 left. He was going to catch the ball on the sideline and basically have time to take one dribble and shoot an off-balance 28-footer. But no call there. The ball went over to IUPUI. They didn't get a shot off really either, and the game went to overtime. The Bison ran out of gas.
So let's switch to that game last Saturday where the Bison were unfortunately dropping the game at home, a 76-66 loss to South Dakota. You look at Matt Mooney putting up 26 points. Just they weren't able to come up with the big home win last Saturday. What were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, full disclosure, I was not able to watch that game. As you mentioned, I was on vacation. We were at the golf tournament, so this is all secondhand stuff and stuff straight from the box score. No film study here, but you look at it, you talk about the 24-4 run that South Dakota went on to end the second half because the Bison were leading that game at one point in the first half, and NDSU was just never able to recover, and that I think was definitely the difference in the game. Also, Tyler Flack, I think, makes a big difference for them. And if I get a chance, I'll go back and watch that and just see all the little things that he does for South Dakota. But they're really impressive. And I think dropping a game to them at home, if NDSU really doesn't play well coming down the stretch, it could potentially be something that'll come back to haunt them.
Because you look at the Summit League standings right now, and if the internet is accurate and up-to-date as I think it is right now, you look at NDSU and South Dakota on top of the standings, NDSU at 8-3, South Dakota at 8-4. I think South Dakota is the clear number one threat to the Bison here in the Summit League.
I don't think there's any question about it, especially now that they have achieved a split and won the only conference game in Fargo that wasn't won by the Bison. They beat IPFW, or Fort Wayne, I guess, as they're now known, who all of a sudden has a losing conference record after beating Indiana, of all the things in this world. Just shows you how good the Summit is and shows you how insane the Summit is. So you just look at the most talented team in the league, probably in Fort Wayne being 5-6. And South Dakota, after taking care of that road game at Fort Wayne, has really put a lot of pressure on the Bison because I don't know the tiebreaker for the whole deal, but as I mentioned, they split. So at some point here, with the Bison only being up a half a game, USD either has to lose a game to the bottom half of the league or the Bison have to win out. And you talk about a road game at Fort Wayne, they still have one of those coming.
Absolutely. So let's get to the game last night. Obviously a 17-point home victory, 82-65 over the Fighting Mike Doms of South Dakota State. You look at this game, and A.J. Jacobson makes another appearance, and most importantly, the Bison are able to sweep SDSU on the season.
Certainly, and with A.J. Hess out with an arm injury, I think it looked like an elbow. He was in some like Terminator-looking brace thing, and then with Ian Tyson in a walking boot, they really were in rough shape from a depth perspective, and you can see what Coach Otzelberger inherited there is not a very talented group of basketball players. They have, of course, Mike Daum, who's probably the best player in the league, a guy now that who's extended his range well past the 3-point line, is a guy that you can lose out there, and also a guy that they can dump it into, can get basically any shot he wants in the post. He's a monster, and if they had anybody around him, they would be a real threat to anyone in the league. But they struggle so much at the guard position, and without AJ Hess and without Ian Tyson, they struggle so much with depth that it's just a rough first season for Otzelberger. There's no doubt about it, and I don't know what they're going to do moving forward, if they're going to be able to go the junior college route to get Daum some help before he graduates, or if they're going to try and build an organic program like North Dakota State. I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to have to do something, because that is a one-man show.
And so let's talk about the star of the night last night, A.J. Jacobson, 26 points and 8 of 13 shooting to go with 12 boards. You look at the game log for A.J. in his last five games, he's either been very hot or very cold. 23 points against Western Illinois, 8 of 11 shooting. Oral Roberts only has 9, IUPUI only has 7, South Dakota only has 5, and then a 26-point performance last night. I think it's pretty evident that A.J. Jacobson is going to be a huge part of the success as they try to make that run to the tourney. But last night, he was absolutely on fire.
Yeah, so impressive from Jacobson, and somebody that really didn't play well against South Dakota was a big part of that loss. I think the Bison internet community let him have it. You know, he's a popular target, I think, at times, just because he's from the area. But at the same time, he really was impressive against South Dakota. And that's something I think when and this is not trying to be disrespectful to AJ, but when he doesn't have to guard a four in the post, and Reed Tellinghuesen is kind of AJ light. I don't think Telly is as good as AJ. I think the numbers probably bear that out. But Jacobson, when he can guard another stretch four, somebody who is just basically a threat from the outside, when he doesn't have to battle play in and play out on post defense, I think he's a much more effective offensive player. And whether it's an effort thing or I don't know, because, you know, this is a kid that is routinely asked to play between 37 and 40 minutes a game. And so when, you know, any kid, no matter, you can talk to Jason Miller, you can talk strength and conditioning all you want, but there is only, you know, certain human capabilities as far as giving 100% on the defensive end and 100% on the offensive end. And when he doesn't have to work so hard in the post on offense, he really is a devastating stretch four because of his ability to shoot open threes and at the same time get to the rim. He's not Paul Miller. He doesn't have that mid-range game. You're mostly going to get layups, you know, post moves and threes, but there's a lot you can do with layups, post moves and threes. And you saw that last night with 26 points and 12 rebounds.
I also want to pick your brain on some on some defensive things in terms of the man-to-man. Then obviously they make a late switch to zone. What were your thoughts on just the defensive schemes that were in play last night, especially in the second half?
Well, it was certainly interesting. I mean, I went down there to the game in Brookings and spoke to their beat writers, asked them about what was going on with the team, and they talked about the 1-3-1 zone defense that South Dakota State was playing at the time, and then they were getting beat. But at the same time, these guys said, look, if these guys played man-to-man, it would be an absolute layup line. They just don't have the athletes to defend. And Otzelberger kind of said the same thing in the post-game press conference. He said, at this time, I really don't believe that our best bet right now is to play man-to-man defense. After North Dakota State beat Fort Wayne, Fort Wayne went down to South Dakota State, and I fully expected South Dakota State to give up 90 to 95 points in that game. I think I even said it on the radio, and lo and behold, they didn't struggle there. They played man-to-man defense. They were able to slow down Fort Wayne enough where Daum was able to take over that game and get them a win, and that's basically what they have to do on defense, really, is just get to a place where Daum can win the game for them. So they've switched to this man-to-man defense, which isn't particularly good, but it's also not awful in the sense of what their 1-3-1 was in guarding the three, and they really were giving up a lot of open threes, and guys were knocking those down. But it shut the Bison down for a good part of that second half. Fortunately for NDSU, they were able to play good enough defense to keep the gap between 11 and 7 points for most of it. And then Richmond just went right into his bag of trips, pulled Jared Jimmy Chitwood Samuelson off the bench. He bangs in 2 25-foot threes, and you know they're out of the zone. But it was an interesting little chess move, down 16 by Otzelberger, and Richmond was able to counter that with Samuelson, and they went right back to the man-to-man defense. But it worked for a good little 4 or 5 minute stretch there.
I'd be curious for your thoughts on Dengu the last few games as well. You look at his game log. The last 5 games, he has not seen double-digit minutes. He's seen 8, 3, 9, 4, and he only got 1 minute last night. I'm curious your thoughts on why Richmond isn't necessarily finding time for Deng. Do you think it's the tight rotation? Do you think there's other things going on? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Richmond, I don't know as though I have a lot of criticisms of him, but if there's one thing about him I've noticed since he took over the team, it's when things get tight, it's not that he doesn't trust guys, but as things get tight, as it gets later in the season, as it gets into conference play, as the games get more and more important, his rotation absolutely tightens up. He goes with the kids that brought him there. He dances with the girl that brung him. And right now, Deng's just not a part of that. He's at least getting into every game. But this is a player, you know, we talked about coming into the season that we said maybe, you know, there's a chance he's the best player on the team. And there was a lot of hype, especially after that Concordia exhibition game, especially after that Xavier non-conference game when he looked like the only kid on the floor that could even play with Xavier. But now that we're back to mid-major basketball, Richmond has tightened up that rotation, and Deng is getting into his rotation spot in the first half, but sometimes in the second half, close games, he's not making it back in there.
A guy that is seeing a ton of time and has been absolutely fantastic here the last 5 games is Tyson Ward. He has played double digits in every single game this season, and most importantly, in the last 5 games, he's seen 20-plus minutes in 4 of them. He's had double-digit points in 3 out of the last 5. Tyson Ward, I mean, I already alluded to it earlier, but he has been how do I want to phrase this, Ross? I think he should probably be at a higher level up school than NDSU, but I am definitely not going to be complaining.
No, I think that's sort of whenever you see a true freshman, you know, we talk about Mike Dom should probably be at Creighton right now or Nebraska or Iowa State, and he's not. And Tyson Ward, while he is not Mike Dom in you know, relation to what he means to his team, he is looking to be like a kid that probably shouldn't be playing mid-major ball with his length and skill level. Defensively, I think he's really a problem for a lot of the smaller guards and wings that are in mid-major ball. And, I mean, he kept him in that IUPUI game. He was outstanding against Oral Roberts. He was not shooting the ball well last night, but still gave the Bison 20 big minutes and is a player that in – you know, kind of coinciding with Carlin Dupree, depending on what they need, they'll really use either one of those two guys at the three position. And he's part of the deal. You talk about Dengu and whether he's part of the deal. I would say he's not. And Tyson Ward definitely is. And he's just been so impressive. And I think, you know, you saw a rookie mistake from him last night. Bison were up 14 or 12. He fouls a guy 35 feet away from the basket with like a minute left and sends him to the free throw line. Has a nice little seat and a talking to from the head coach. But those are things that you're going to be fine with from a freshman. It's not a huge deal because it's not a game, you know, a game losing play, but just a learning opportunity really for a young kid like that. So I've been extremely impressed with Tyson. I think he's going to be a big part of the program moving forward and a big part of what NDSU might be able to do, making some noise this season in the month of March.
So you look at the schedule here in the final 5 games of conference play, starting with Denver, and we'll get into that in a second, but you look at the final 5 games: Denver, Fort Wayne, Western Illinois, Oral Roberts, and Omaha. Then you already talked about South Dakota's schedule. NDSU is a half game ahead right now. So do they have to win out if they want that number one seed come the Summit League tournament?
I don't think they have to win out. I think if they go 4-1, they'll be the number one seed. It's you talk about USD as their biggest threat. It's still the Summit League. I know they're playing really good ball. I know they just beat Fort Wayne, but I think the idea that USD is going to run the table going home here as well is maybe a little bit of recency bias. I think that it's likely at this juncture that they'll drop one more game, and then, of course, the Bison can drop one more game and still win the league.
So let's get into this Denver game. You look at this Denver team, they've won 5 of their last 7, and obviously fans remember back to that mid-January game where NDSU got slapped in the face in a 24-point road loss. Now they get them back. This is a team that's won 4 out of their last 5 games coming into Saturday. So this is going to be a very important game, folks. So please, please show up to try and support this Bison team, because this is a very, very important game.
It is, and it's a game that they lost on the other end as far as, the game in Denver, they got smoked. That was their first conference loss. They really struggled with Denver big man Daniel Amigo. Rosga is still there. He's still shooting the ball a ton. It's a Denver team that needs to position itself for the Summit League tourney as well. Nobody at this point is really guaranteed a spot in the Summit League tourney in that bottom half. It looks to me like Oral Roberts is going to be the team that misses the tournament, but that's not set in stone by any stretch. So I think you have to pay attention to what's going on with this Denver team and see if NDSU's improved their post defense, because they have struggled a few times against some big time interior scoring presences this season.
All right, I think the final thing to note here before we wrap things up is there is a JUCO forward name to know, someone I know from my good friend Ryan James that NDSU has called on in recent days, and that is Williston State forward Jamil Jackson, someone that was a Minneapolis North standout. I believe last season is his first year of junior college ball, so he would be a four years to play 3, and he could be someone that could bring in some immediate help in the forward front. So it's a name to watch here going forward. But, Ross, do you have anything else to add before we wrap things up?
No, I don't.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for this signing day and basketball breakdown edition. Again, if you want to head on over to the Bison Report, we have a bunch of Q&As up with all the signees about what their hopes and dreams are for their Bison careers, and we just put up our Bison Report Recruiting Awards piece here just a couple hours ago. So head on over to the Bison Report to check everything out there. I guess we'll just talk to you guys next week when we talk some basketball. So, Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.